Welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And I'm joined tonight by Dirt, a.k.a. at PCN underscore Dirt on Twitter.
Yay, yay me.
From popculturenetwork.com.
Plug.
And we also have Agent 70, a.k.a. at Agent underscore 70 on Twitter.
What's up, fellas?
And this is the Comic Book Chronicles. So, of course, go to the website, theclicknation.com, to find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles, previous comic book reviews, other podcast shows, and much more. Make sure to follow.
Much more? How much more?
Very much. Make sure to go to Twitter and follow the Twitter account at TheClickNation. And, of course, my personal Twitter account at TimDOGG98. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/TheClickNation. Let's see what else we got. We're on Google Plus. Search for TheClickNation. And also join the Click Nation community on Google Plus. Subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And we're also on YouTube. Subscribe to youtube.com/TheClickNation. And if you ever have any feedback you want to have read on a future show, send that on over to theclicknation@gmail.com. And also a quick shout out to comicrelated.com, who also houses our comic book related podcasts, which are, of course, the Comic Book Chronicles and other comic podcasts. So check them out at comicrelated.com. So, as I said in the show notes, it's been a busy week in news for all things comic book related, of course, in comic books and in other media. So we'll get to talking about that right now. So first up, actually, this happened a week or so ago, but I don't think we ever mentioned it on the show. But real quickly, the CW Network casted Grant Gustin to play Barry Allen in the Flash spinoff from Arrow.
Interesting.
Flash spinoff?
Or yes, sir. Arrow spinoff. Flash is spinoff from Arrow.
That's right.
And some guy he's not a regular, I guess Grant Gustin, last thing he's been on is Glee, but he's not a cast member. He's like guest starred on there or something. Yeah. Yeah. Pretty boy. So that's that. Let's see. Marvel may have already spilled the beans on who Thanos' son is going to be in Infinity. I guess for one of those, I'm not sure which video game it is, but they released an update for it, and there's a character called Thane, who I guess once they updated his character to the game, they had a synopsis for him, and it sort of tied into and referenced things from Infinity and having to work with the Avengers. And he sort of looks like Thanos a little bit. And his left hand and right hand are glowing different colors. I think like one hand is like gold and the other one's glowing purplish color. And it's like a life and death type power. Like he has the power of life and death in both his hands.
Life, death.
So. Thane. T-H-A-N-E.
We'll see how that works out.
Yeah. Sterling Gates is going to take over for Matt Kent on the Forever Evil Argus limited series. Because Matt Kent is drawing, or not drawing, he's writing so many books, he had to take something else off his plate. But Sterling Gates, who's going to be kind of familiar with some of the characters in that limited series, because he's already writing Agent Gunn and the Justice League of America's Vibe. And I believe he wrote the Killer Frost Villains Month Justice League of America book. And she's supposed to be a character in that. So.
All right.
That one was okay.
Yeah. Let's see. On ABC on Tuesday night, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. debuted. And did both my co-hosts get a chance to watch?
Yep.
I did.
What did we think?
After you, Dirk.
It was okay. I felt it really lacked any sort of real heat or any sort of like emotional depth to it. You got a whole bunch of characters thrown at you, and there were so many like little subplot things that they were trying to weave into it that nobody really stood out as anyone that you were supposed to be particularly interested in or why you should particularly care for them. I guess part of my problem with it was that the pacing of it felt a little awkward, because when you've got a movie, you know, and you want to make it 90 minutes, you want to make it 100 minutes, you want to make it 120 minutes, you just do whatever and you pace the movie to fit that time. Whereas you could really tell that this one, it's like they set up a whole bunch of stuff and then it's like, oh, we got to wrap it up in 10 minutes, you know. It seemed to really compress at the end. So, I mean, it was okay. As pilots go, I don't think it's the strongest show that's come out this season. And, I'll give it a couple more weeks just to see if it picks up. You know, it could just be one of those things where they had to get their feet on the ground and show you the things they have to show you before they can really take off. So, like I said, I'll give it a couple weeks, see if it picks up. But really, just if this had been any other show, if this had just been, you know, random, you know, Fringe 2 or something like that, I don't know that I would go back and watch it again.
I think the key is that it's not Fringe 2, is that it does have, you know, that it does have a little bit of a cachet of character and sensibility, and it's drawing on them. I think I agree in that it tried to hit the ground running, but it really only stuck the landing. So it really didn't get to do much more other than introduce us to the players very superficially. And beyond that, only setting up sort of the environment. That's pretty much all they did. But they threw us enough. They threw the fanboys and the fangirls enough Easter eggs and cookies that we would be coming back. And I think that's enough to provide enough positive word of mouth for people to come back, at least for the next episode or two or three, and really give it a shot.
Yeah, I wasn't really expecting too much out of it to begin with. So, I mean, as Dirt kind of said already, as pilots go, it was ho-hum, nothing extraordinary. They referenced a couple times some of the different Marvel movies. So if you were a first-time viewer or maybe had watched some of the previous Marvel movies but didn't have them fresh on your mind, it might have been kind of hard to follow along with certain things. Maria Hill made an appearance early on. It would have been nice to have Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury do something.
Yeah, didn't it seem kind of awkward that there's a show about S.H.I.E.L.D. and the guy who's in charge of S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't make an appearance? Like, I'm sure, I know he's expensive or, you know, whatever, but you would think that if nothing else, they would pull some old footage from another movie and CGI a new background behind it, you know, and like dub over a voice or something. Good job there. And then, you know, maybe move on to something else. But
I was just going to say, I think, again, we're underestimating how different this particular show is. It's not the regular, it's not the run of the mill pilot that's trying to gain an audience. It's already got an audience and it's trying to gain more people and trying to convert more to the audience. I think Disney's willing to give, I think the show creators and the showrunners know that Disney's going to give the show a lot of leeway, you know, short of a pilot night flop, which they didn't have. You know, Disney is going to give this a shot. So I think they were able to, I guess, develop an idea for the show over a course of a couple of different arcs, story arcs. And right. I think my point is, I think they're going to throw Sam Jackson in at some point later because from what I've read, he wants to do it and the showrunners want to get him in there. So I'm hoping that they get it in. You know, like you said, he's probably the most expensive, you know, of the non-superpowered guys.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm not trying to say that they're in any danger of being canceled or anything like that. It did super ratings. It was, you know, top of the night and whatever. But what I just kind of felt was, like, me as a comic reader, like, what was really there? Like, a brief appearance by Maria Hill. Of course, you got Coulson. But then, you know, there was nothing really else that screamed Marvel Comics or screamed, you know, it's like you had these secret agents, you know, the scientists working on something, and you think that they're probably AIM, you know, because that's what it seems to be, but they didn't say them. They didn't show, like, the trademark suits. You know, like, there was nothing else that was really, like, screaming.
Right.
They'd show Hulk on the TV screen in the background, or they'd show Iron Man flying through the sky, you know, but that was all, like, on a TV screen in the background showing scenes from the movie. There was nothing that was really part of the show that really felt like, you know, hey, Marvel Universe, everybody, right. You know.
Right. I think it's part of the slow reveal. But also there was Lola.
Who cares about Lola? Yeah.
That was pretty cool. See, this is the generation gap that we have on this show. That was pretty cool. The flying shield car. Spoilers, if anyone's watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, on DVR tonight or tomorrow.
Well, that was pretty cool. The commercials, so they gave that away already.
No, but did they show her flying in the commercials?
Nah, I don't know about that.
I don't think, see, that's the kicker. That's the kicker. And, you know, for anyone that's read any sort of, like, old Cap or old S.H.I.E.L.D. comics, and you see the flying car bit, once they showed me that, I was sold. I was like, they've got it in there. No, they're pointing in the right direction.
Well, I guess that was kind of the other thing that bothered me, is that the big thing about Nick Fury and S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, in the big 70s run, was that it was a James Bond, you know, tie-in type spoof storyline, and this didn't have any of that spy feel to it, you know? It was just government agents doing government agent stuff, not spy stuff, you know, not subterfuge of any kind or, you know, just...
Right. Well, this is a little bit more, he's super heroic.
And they also went with a random guy to be their anti-hero villain, you know, the hooded hero, whatever. You know, it's like they picked the most generic, bland instead of, like, it could have been paced by Pete, you know, just somebody.
Yeah, somebody unlikely to be in the movies.
Yeah, yeah.
And why did Coulson automatically, when they saw that footage, that Sky or whoever recorded of him saving the girl from the exploding building, why did Coulson automatically call him a superhero? He was just a guy with power. It's not like, yeah, he saved a person from the building, but as we saw, he wasn't.
Marvel and DC own the co-trademark on the term superhero, so they want to use it as often as they can to keep it theirs.
I have two worries about the show. First, I'm not sure if Coulson has enough personality to carry a show. And number two, my worry is them focusing in the show on, I know the big thing about the show is, you know, ordinary people following ordinary people in this world full of superheroes, but will fans care enough about these ordinary people to follow along?
No. I would almost think that one of them would have to, at some point, you know, along the series, become infected or irradiated or something, and you think they're going to die, and then they bust out, you know, a whole set of powers, and then suddenly they're on the other side of, you know, the whole project. I would almost think something, some sort of conflict like that's got to develop along the way. But I don't know. Like I said, I'll at least give it a couple more weeks for my viewing. I haven't written it off yet or anything, but as pilots go, as an opening chapter, it was just kind of there.
Okay. So, yeah, stay tuned as we'll be discussing this every Thursday, I'm sure.
And shout out to Eclectic, who asked on Twitter last night when I'm making my appearance on the show. And I tweeted back, Whedon, Colonel Fury, and Commander Hill have my contact information.
No, you were there. You were in the subway scene. He just wasn't paying close enough attention to the crowd.
That's what you gotta tell him. Oh man, I tried to turn the ask a question feature on, but apparently you have to turn that on before the show starts. I was going to ask the question, what did everyone think of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Well, they can tweet it to us using the hashtag Comic Book Chronicles.
Yep, we'll get it. All right, next bit of news. So after Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. went off the air, Warner Brothers and DC Comics wasted no time in announcing that Fox had picked up the series order for a Gotham television show, which will follow James Gordon in his early career as a police officer in Gotham City. Do we care?
Look forward to checking that one out, too. I do. I mean, did you ever read, was it
Gotham Central? That was Brubaker. I mean, if they take from that, that'll be cool. I've read a couple of those issues, but we'll see how that goes. My gut feeling is going to be kind of a lot like the flashbacks in the Nolan movies, and what am I thinking of? Maybe some of the Batman animated series of recent vintage that have shown like a younger Batman with dealing with a younger Gordon. So I think that's probably going to be, you know, it's going to tap into that same vein of, you know, inexperience, distrust of the Gotham City system, and the corruption.
One of the things that made that original series so strong, and you would think that they would tie in a similar way on this series, regardless if it's actually based on Gotham Central or not, is that it's basically at its heart a character piece. It's a a procedural drama, a police officer. It's just the people that they deal with are not your average criminal. And that's, you know, really what pushed it was the, you know, Law and Order with stronger characters than your average folks that they throw on that show. But, I mean, that's really what kind of captivated people and pulled them along and seeing those characters develop. So I would think you're going to see, you know, some of the main characters, Renee Montoya and Harvey Bullock and, you know, those type of people that have always kind of been in the background. But I would think that, you know, they're going to have to tie in with superheroes and supervillains at some point along there. I just don't know how deep they're going to do it as the show is first, you know, finding its legs. Is it going to be based on the idea that they're dealing with, you know, supervillains and that type of thing? Or is it going to be more of just Gotham City's the total dirtbag town and, you know, they're trying to clean it up? So it'll be interesting, but, I mean, we're a long way off from seeing it, so.
Definitely, definitely. I think something like that is a lot easier to pull off because you don't have that.
You have to worry about specter, special effects.
Exactly, that specter of the superhero.
Right. Yeah, because no Batman and no Joker. You may get a couple of low-level Batman villains, but I wonder if Gotham will start off like how Arrow did, where Arrow started off first season, no powers, never have any powers, and then it did pretty well its first season, and then Man of Steel came out, and they're like, second season, we're going to have powers, we're going to introduce the Flash.
Exactly. Maybe they'll do like Black Mask or something, as like the big bad, something like that. They may not use like the really big intellectual property villains.
As long as it's not Birds of Prey.
Are we making fun of the previous iteration of Birds of Prey?
Yes.
Okay.
That lasted a season, didn't it?
I mean, the original TV show from, what, 15 years ago? When was that show on?
I didn't watch it, so I know of what you speak, though.
Consider yourself lucky.
Lucky. All right.
And also, I think it was yesterday or last night, I'm assuming it must have been Marvel that released the footage from San Diego Comic-Con when Joss Whedon announced the Avengers 2 sequel name. Did it, both of you, get a chance to watch that?
Nope. I saw something about it. I didn't get a chance to watch it. How about you?
Yeah, I saw the headline of it, but I didn't actually watch it.
I meant to embed it on the show, on the site, the post for this episode. I think I will, hopefully, if I remember. But it was cool. I mean, it's like under a minute long, the actual like video portion of the reveal is like basically what you read online. You know, it's the Iron Man mask, and it's kind of being like smashed, and it's like a close up of the helmet kind of being spun around, and it's being smashed, and it's like voiceovers from the characters in the first movie. And then when it ends, it camera pans away, and it shows Ultron head.
Did it look like the comic version of Ultron?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Cool.
Let's see. Next up we have... So, let's see. Marvel released today, I guess on... I forget, USA Today, they announced that Charles Soule is going to be writing a new She-Hulk ongoing series in the all-new Marvel Now!
Marvel Now! Marvel Now?
Because he's a lawyer in real life. That's his first job is
active
lawyering.
Practicing lawyer.
So he
right
gets
here
to
in Brooklyn,
lawyer.
New York. Right
so
here in Brooklyn,
New York. To look forward to. And he used a good example of how like he could take sort of these wacky situations with her. He's like, say you have the chameleon who comes to her and he's like, he wants to sue someone for trademark infringement or something like that. And, you know, would she take the case and what would come of it? What shenanigans would happen? So.
Interesting.
And along
nice
with.
Nice to see him being productive. This guy, I don't know where he gets the time to do all this.
Yeah, him and Matt Kent are kind of like everywhere now.
I mean, this guy's got an open. He's got a, you know, if you go to his website, he's got an active practice doing a lot of different things.
Is he also in a band?
Yes, he is.
I believe so, yes. Oh. I think the music stuff has started to take. I read that interview that you guys were talking about last week, and I think the music stuff is starting to take a slight backseat, but it's still there. So, you know, but it seems like he's writing a lot of stuff, and like I said, on top of his active work, makes me feel like a slacker. Seriously, you know, I'm more in Koi Pham's boat. Like I would need to sit down and, you know, Koi Pham, the artist, you know, was penciling Incredible Hercules while, like, trying murder cases in Pennsylvania. So, you know, more power to that guy. That's crazy.
What is it with lawyers in the comic industry all of a sudden?
I don't know. I don't know if it's sudden. I know it's been a developing trend.
Maybe now they're all being outed.
Yeah. I was about to say now the legal job market is isn't that good.
I know Newsarama had a nice long interview with Charles Soule either last week or week before last.
Right.
And he talked about how being the traits of a lawyer come in handy, you know, doing the comic book writing. He was like, you know, setting deadlines and meeting them and being very, what's the word I'm looking for?
Detail-oriented.
Yeah, detail-oriented. And it's probably something they're like, man, this is easy. I could just write a couple stuff here and there in my free time and get paid for it, freelance.
Yeah, if you've got the ideas, you need the ideas first. The ideas need to be there. If it was so easy, I'd be doing it.
You know what I always wonder? I think I've mentioned this on the show before. Like, what goes into the whole, like, when this new She-Hulk book came around, did Marvel already have, like, that they want a She-Hulk title, and they're like asking different writers to submit their take on it, and they pick the best one? Or does like Charles Soule go to Marvel editors and like, hey, I want to write a She-Hulk book, and here's my, you know, synopsis and hands it to them, and then they're like, oh, okay, we'll take that. Like, how does it work?
I think it often works both ways. It can be a mixture of both, too. They might ask him to pitch it just to see if he'd be interested.
And, like, how would they...
Because of his legal background.
How would they know to pitch that? Or, well, I guess if they have an idea, just pitch it, I guess.
Right.
Like, how would they know if they'd be interested?
I mean, She-Hulk's been in... She hasn't... Well, I guess she's... You could call it the spotlight because she's on a cartoon. You know, Hulk, Agents of Smash. And she's been in FF. The FF book, the Future Foundation book. And... She even shows up in Mighty Avengers now.
Well, she will be. She hasn't joined the cast yet, but she will.
And she even showed up in what was that? The
Assemble?
No. The crossover with the kids, the Contest of Champions
arena.
Exactly. The Infinity Hunt was it?
The Hunt.
Yeah, so she shows up in there too. Exactly, she shows up in there too. So she's got some exposure right now. So it might be, Marvel's probably thinking that it's a good time to test the water and throw out a She-Hulk title.
And to finish up with Marvel this week, they've been releasing more teasers that Dirt loves so much.
I don't even run them on the site.
Oh man, I love them. I tweeted today. I was like, I'm probably one of the few people that actually enjoys the teasers. It's like it's all about promotion.
It's the most worthless. Like even as a fan, I hate them because they don't even give you. You don't know what character. You don't know what book. You don't know if it's a one shot, if it's an ongoing, if it's a crossover.
You get to guess.
I don't want to guess.
Like
every time I guess, I think it's something better than what they actually do.
I agree with Dirt on this one, but I still like to guess. I like to guess, but I hate the disappointment.
Like the two from Bendis, the Trial and Judgment, they're obviously all new X-Men Guardians of the Galaxy crossover, because he even talked about that before Marvel Now started or once it started, he talked about how both his books would be crossing over and it would involve alien races finding out that Jean Grey is back alive and not being happy that the Phoenix Bearer is back after she obliterated cosmos or universes. So that'll be that one. And then there was the Mind Bubble from Remender was announced today. He already said in interviews a while ago that he was going to introduce a Dr. Mind Bubble character in Captain America. He'll be a weapons minus somehow involved with that as Dirt shows a halo over his head.
Now that we all have access to effects, right?
Yep. Let's see, there was a corporate image from Peter David that more than likely will revolve something around X-Factor relaunch.
Right.
And the Cortex Corporation that I guess was hinted at near the end of his last arc. And Rad from Mike Allred and Dan Slott, probably Silver Surfer.
And, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. Well, you know, was it San Diego or one of those conventions, he was at a panel and he had hooked his laptop up to the bit screen and on his desktop was a Silver Surfer folder.
Oh. And
he was like, oh, I need to hide this.
Mm-hmm.
Slot, you devious little bastard.
But then the question is this going to be maybe an FF? Will he maybe do like an arc on FF after Fraction leaves, since Allred's already the writer or artist on that?
That's an interesting thought.
But that's it for news.
No, there's one more story.
Oh, what do we got?
According to LatinoReview.com, which is a major movie spoiler and, you know, new secret revealer website. Apparently,
spoilers.
Apparently, they are casting a Wonder Woman for the next Man of Steel 2 versus Batman movie.
You know what's funny about this?
Wow.
I listened to the IGN movies podcast, and they've been talking about this for like the last, it feels like 2 weeks now, because they have been talking about the like you said, the whole thing with the casting and the. Them casting an athletic 20 to 30 something year old woman, and they had been, you know, assuming that, of course, it was Wonder Woman, And then Latino Review finally posted it and it goes viral today. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Although one of the things that they mentioned in their casting is that they are open to all ethnicities. So they're not specifically looking for a particular person. They're just going to leave it open to whatever actress comes in that they think does the best job that can do it. So it'll be interesting to see who they eventually end up with.
Does Linda Carter have a daughter?
All right. Any more news?
No, that's all I had.
Okay. That's it. Yeah, make sure to let us know what you think of this possible Wonder Woman casting and who should be Wonder Woman. Now, let me bring up comiclist.com so I can see what books came out this week.
What, Zombies vs. Cheerleader, Volume 2, Number 3? Anybody? Anybody? Bueller?
What?
Did Boom have anything out this week?
No, Three Fingerprints. Zombies vs. Cheerleaders.
Start with the bees.
And somehow I missed it. Okay, we got that comic list up yet?
Yeah. Archaea came out with Mask Guard Legends of the Guard, Volume 2, Number 3. I did not have a chance to
actually
this.
Have this website up, so I don't have to sit here and wait for my slow ass laptop to.
I'll get through the interesting A's before we get to what you want to talk to. Archie Comics.
Well, wait. Before you leave.
A's?
Mouse Guard.
Okay.
Oh, Mouse Guard. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say Legends of the Guard. I haven't had a chance to read this one yet, but I have been reading this series, you know, in general up till now, and I've really enjoyed it. You know, for this being Volume 2, it's still captivating. It's still a lot of fun. And I really enjoy it. I love seeing the different artists' take on the Mouse Guard universe.
Definitely.
It's one of those books that if you haven't read anything having to do with Mouse Guard, picking up Legends of the Guard is kind of just a good sampler. You see a bunch of different characters, you get a taste of a bunch of different stories, and just kind of ease yourself into it. Whereas the actual book is kind of deceptive because you think it's little mice wearing medieval clothes. It's a cute kitty thing, but it actually gets, you know, pretty deep and
it's
pretty far into
book.
It.
Excellent book. It's an excellent book. I can't recommend it enough. You know, on previous shows, I've showed off my copies of the trade paperbacks. I like, you know, the format that the trade paperbacks come in because it does feel like it's a nice solid volume as opposed to the single edition, single issues of these books. But I'm looking forward to reading this and definitely looking forward to the next collected edition. Hopefully I can get it signed by David Peterson the next time I see him.
Okay.
All right. Got your list up?
Yep.
All right, let's roll. We're up to Archie and Aspen.
Yeah, I was going to say, anyone want to mention anything from those two before we move on?
Nope.
Even Boom Studios doesn't really have much this week unless you're an Adventure Time fan. Nope.
I was going to say, one of my children's favorite books, Peanuts, came out this week.
Cool.
Recently, they've been reprinting a lot of old Charles Schulz stuff in it. Which is actually kind of interesting to go through and just look at. And, you know, some of the characters have changed quite a bit since the old days, and they've been doing variant covers where they show the original character designs for some of the characters on the variant. And so it's just kind of neat, you know, to see how far characters have come. Because you don't think about them really having changed at all since you were a kid, but considering how long the strip has been going, you know, and even though he's passed away, they still do new material with different artists, you know, a lot of times for these types of books. So it is interesting to see how even simple characters like from Peanuts have evolved over the years.
Cool.
Okay.
So,
although I'm definitely spoiled by the collected reprints that I forget which publisher put them out. Was it IDW that put these out? Those big collected editions?
Yeah, I think they put out like the big volumes, like
right.
The thick phone book.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
I'm spoiled by those. You know, when you have a chance to look at those are really, you know,
reminds me of the great old Calvin and Hobbes books.
Yes, yes, those are great ways to read all, you know, the collected Peanuts cartoons. So. All right.
Next up, we got Dark Horse Comics. They have a couple things that I haven't gotten to yet, but I will. Captain Midnight number 3.
Captain Midnight!
And I don't know if we mentioned it on last week's show or not, but they're going to be launching another superhero comic, but in a limited series, and it's going to spin out of Captain Midnight, Skyman, going to be written by, what's his name? Joshua Hale Fialkoff.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't realize he was writing it.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I think it's going to be a 4-issue limited series. So I will be checking that out when it comes out. But I have been enjoying Captain Midnight, and I like this little superhero-ish universe Dark Horse has going on with Captain Midnight and Skyman once he comes out, and Brain Boy, who sort of ties into that because he works for Albright Industries, and Captain Midnight's name is Albright, so it's like his company once he, I guess whoever was running it when they thought he was dead. Next up, we got
Itty Bitty Hellboy that came out this week.
Yes, it did. Itty Bitty.
And that's another one
issue.
Well, I was gonna say this is another one of those books where it's obviously for kids, but I mean, if you're an adult, go ahead and read it. You'll enjoy it, and especially if you're familiar at all with the Hellboy universe, like it's definitely the dose of fun that you need in a universe like that.
Yeah. And I was gonna say, did your kids read it?
Oh, of course. They each have their own copy. Like, I couldn't get it for one and not the other. They each had to have their own. Actually, anything that Balthazar and Franco do, they each want their own copy of.
And we also have, let's see, Mind Management number 15. I'm not reading this, but it's a very... the word I'm looking for. Very
popular. It's got
popular.
A lot of
popular.
It's got a lot of good. It's got a lot of positive reviews out there. Positive feedback.
And it's one that I want to read. I just still haven't gotten around to. But at some point, but it's one of those things that I keep meaning to. But it's like a new one comes out like every month or something. It's like hard to keep up.
Definitely. Perish forbid he keeps up a regular schedule, right?
Yeah, I know. Who does that? He ain't no John Cassidy.
No!
Yeah, doing the writing and art. Even though the art's kind of rough sketch. But it's still nice.
Well, it's his style.
Yeah. That's how my style is going to be. Whenever my future independent comic book comes out, I want to be artist and writer on it.
Yeah, it's going to be ballpoint pen on a napkin.
Yep. I get paid double. Got to share no royalties with anyone. It's mine. And I guess that's it for Dark Horse. Unless
no, I didn't have a chance. I didn't have a chance to read any of these.
Star Wars Legacy number 2, number 7.
No luck.
And now DC. I'm only a week behind on my Villains Month books.
Aye, aye, aye.
All right. All right, Dirt, let's rock and roll. Did you have a chance to read Action Comics 23.4, the Metallo issue?
I did.
What'd you think? Because I didn't. I skimmed it. I did not have the wherewithal to read the whole thing.
Yeah, it was all right. He had been in Action Comics in the first year, and so kind of followed up on that. I don't even know where to go on this.
What I was going to say is I didn't – maybe I'm too enamored, and I think that's the right word to use. I really liked the animated Metallo from the animated Superman cartoon.
The Terminator.
Yes, I really liked that version.
Yeah.
And I liked that origin, and I was not very keen on where this comic book version was going. And when we first mentioned it, I skimmed it because it just did not seem interesting.
The way the character developed originally in Action Comics was fine. I really didn't have a problem with that. The problem is when you bring the character back, because Grant Morrison told his story and he was done. Like, there wasn't anything else for this guy. And they kind of found a reason to just kind of wake him up for no reason, throw him into, a battle and show him off. But
Oh, so he was basically out of commission at the end of that run. Okay.
Yeah, he was basically comatose. His power was fading. They had no way to really bring him back, so he was just kind of forever, like his mind was on, but his body wouldn't work.
Okay.
He was kind of trapped forever, you know.
Gotcha.
And what they ended up doing is powering him with a chunk of kryptonite that kind of supercharges him and brought him back. But it's one of those characters where, you know, if you look at this cover, you see a guy in a big metal suit. His head is sticking out with all these wires on it. Yet he walks through fire. He walks underwater. He does all this stuff. The skin never gets scratched. The hair never gets singed. You know, it's just like it's goofy in its stupidity. And the original motivation for the character is that he was in love with Lois Lane. Who is, you know, General Lane's daughter, and General Lane was the guy at the Army base who was in charge of this project. So he wanted to win favor with Lois, and he went through the project in order to become this super soldier guy.
Okay.
And he became jealous of Superman, so he wanted to attack him, whatever. Mm. And it's like that storyline has already played itself out, and then they kind of revived it as part of the storyline, and it's like, well, we've already done that. You know, we've already been through everything. They really didn't bring anything new to the character except that they woke him up and now he's out there. So it was, you could tell it was just one of those things where somebody said, hey, we got to fill a villain's book.
Right. Exactly. Oh, this is the roster of Superman villains, so, and this is what we can put in. Okay. I was just, like I said, I was really very happy with the characterization from the animated series, and I'm just not keen on where this character's going.
Well, the one from the animated series was basically the one that John Byrne came up with when he relaunched Superman in 86. So, like I said, when this one came out in the Grant Morrison run, I didn't have a problem with it because it fit well with the story, and everything that Grant Morrison did with him made sense at the way he was drawing parallels to Superman and parallels to the relationship with Lois Lane and all that kind of stuff. But then once that's over, the character's done.
Gotcha.
You know, there's no reason to bring him back.
It kind of sucks that they would create such a finality to that story, that character's arc.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, he is only Metallo.
I got a question. Worth.
Yeah.
Why does Grant Morrison always leave characters or titles in like worse shape? Were, because you're saying like he was done with Metallo, and basically you made it sound like the character is done. There's nothing else left to be done with them. Hasn't he done the same thing with Batman Incorporated?
Well, it's kind of the same way with if you take the movies, the Batman movies. You know, they bring in a Two-Face or a Joker because they've got a specific storyline and a specific role for the character. And then they finish off the character. You know, it's one of those things, if you think back to the classic, the Golden Age, they would bring in a character, the character would do its run, and then generally they would die off or be shunted into deep space or whatever because they never thought the comics would continue for years and years and years. You know, it was never expected. And I think Grant Morrison just kind of has that idea of, I'm telling my story, I'm not setting up a story for someone else to do in 10 years, you know?
Yeah, I guess so. I hate that in movies, too. Why kill the villains at the end of all these movies? That's dumb. Then you can't use them again. And Morrison should know that other people are going to use these characters again.
Right, but it's comic book death, so, you know, they'll find a way to revive.
I just assumed that because it was Metallo, that someone would, you know, pick up that research from the Army, continue the project, and it would move on to a new person.
Right.
Instead of taking this same person and just waking them up.
Everyone can be Metallo.
Right.
Okay. Aquaman 23.2, Ocean Master.
I actually read this one.
I will eventually.
This was actually fairly interesting. I'm not all that familiar with the Ocean Master character. And this was, and I had the general idea of who the character was. But I thought that this was actually not a bad issue.
My only fault with the issue is that I got to the final page and I kind of felt like that's it.
Right.
Like this covered maybe 15 minutes of his story.
Right.
I mean, it almost felt like nothing happened in this book except
the breakout.
Everything you would need to understand who the character is. So, right. Like, it succeeded in the sense that it told you who he was and why he was there and, you know, what drives him, what type of honor or morality or whatever he has. But, you know, still you get to the end and you realize that, you know, every page is like 45 seconds to a minute of, you know, dialogue and action. Like, it was... You know, like I said, when I got done, I was like, wait, that's it? Like, nothing happened.
Agreed.
I did enjoy it. It made you, I think, connect with the character. And there were some things in the Black Manta comic that showed Ocean Master during the breakout that they didn't show in here. So the two books kind of worked together to tell his story. So right. They kind of skipped over a couple things. But if you read the Black Manta one, that's where those things happened.
Right, like when they were retrieving their equipment.
Yeah, when they walk into the equipment lockers and they're both there at the same right. time, just kind of stare at each other while they're grabbing their weapons. Yeah, some of the fun stuff like that. They didn't show it from his point of view, but you already got it.
Right. Who's the creative team on this? I'm trying to find it now.
I don't know where I have that sitting.
You have to actually look inside the book to find it.
Trying. Oh, here it is. It's miniaturized. My bad.
Yeah, sometimes they put them at the end of the issue.
No, it's towards the beginning. I just have to. So it's Tony Bedard and Geraldo Borges.
Yeah, Jeff Johns helped to plot it out. So
right. So it wasn't, you know, I think it was one of the easier Villains Month books to read, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, you said, it would definitely move, you know, at a brisk pace.
It was definitely easy enough. Like, if you knew nothing of the character and nothing of the story, I mean, this gave you the backdrop that you needed to know who he was and how he got in the situation to be locked up and how he reacts to the people around him. And you kind of hate him at first, but then towards the end, you kind of like the guy.
Or you can at least respect what his thinking.
Right,
is.
You understand his code of honor, right. and things like that.
Right. So yeah, like just as you said, I appreciated it because it was an easy read. It was easy to pick up and read. Yeah. So, all right, cool. Let's move on to Batman 23.4 and Bane. Why, yes, it's Bane.
And it's Batman, and it's the copy and pasted Batman from the other.
Oh, mercy.
Yeah, it's the same Batman again. Yeah.
Oh, mercy.
Did anybody else read it? Or just me?
I did. I read it. Go ahead, Derek. You take the lead.
You know, all I was going to say is they've made it difficult to really kind of figure out how much of Batman history still exists and how much of it has changed, because it appears that the whole Nightfall storyline happened. I mean, right. Bane talks about taking out Batman and destroying him, but we've got no Azrael in the New 52. We've got no, you know, Batman in the robotic looking suit shooting shurikens at people. Like, none of that has come up, and you'd think there'd be some sort of mention or, you know, something of that in the New 52. So apparently, at some point, Bane showed up, broke Batman, took control of Gotham. Batman came back and beat right. him, and yeah, and that was it. It's kind of one of those things where it's like Batman's been around maybe 7 years now, and somehow he's had three Robins, a broken bat, back, Father Damien, you know, like all this random stuff has happened in this short time period. It didn't, you know, explain any of that, but again, as far as Bane goes, this book is more not so much explaining his origin as much as setting up for his future appearances in the Bat titles.
Right. It glosses over the origin, really. But how much do you really need to know about the origin? Right. It does set up the origin for the most part. And I couldn't help but read this in the stupid Bane voice from Tom Hardy.
You mean Sean Connery?
Yeah. But the faithful know that it was the man who became great. Oh, Jesus. But, you know, it's like you said, it sets up the miniseries coming that accompanies Forever Evil.
Arkham War,
exactly. So it basically sets up the sides that are going to be taken.
One thing I did enjoy is that if you look at the artwork on the first couple pages, he's in this brick gym, fighting a bunch of random dudes, and the graffiti on the wall names a bunch of old Batman creatives. So there's like Dixon on the wall for Chuck Dixon, Barreto, who is one of the artists on there, Peterson, who did a bunch of the covers and stuff for Detective and Shadow the Bat. And, you know, it's just kind of one of those things where I had to stop and kind of slowly flip through the pages to look at all the little names that were penciled on the wall back there and hidden in there.
Sure.
Easter eggs like that are always fun.
That is cool. And also I kind of thought to myself, how hard would it be for me to pick up a 45-pound plate and hurl it at someone's head?
Like a frisbee?
The next time I get down to the bench, I'm going to pick up a plate and see how easy that is.
Well, you don't have venom cursing through your veins.
Exactly.
Venom makes everything easier.
Except controlling your temper, apparently.
Exactly. All right, so, I mean, it was kind of a perfunctory. It didn't say all that much. It was just a setup, just as you said. It was a setup for the next for that limited series that's coming up. So it was really wasn't all that much.
Kind of makes sense for a character like that. He's one of the more recognizable characters. Random person off the street hears about these 3D covers and goes in. They're like, oh yeah, I saw the movie and I think he's the guy that beat up Batman, whatever. So they pick it up, they read it, and it's a tie-in for an upcoming story, so it's more likely to entice someone to come pick it up in the future.
Makes sense. All right, so let's see what's next. Batman and Robin 23.4, Killer Croc. I did not read this.
it did show his origin. I mean, it showed he had basically this birth defect and he was shunned by his family for it. It does explain, while everything's going on up top, he's the guy who rules the sewers, underground Gotham, he's building up his own little army. And one of the things is that it did tie in something from his past. Like, I don't want to spoil everything because it's actually a pretty decent story, but something from his past actually ties into what's currently going on and the reason why he's kind of acting the way he is, because the way the story unfolds is you assume that because he's Killer Croc, he's wild and he's just dangerous and he's feral and he just, chomps up people because he's an animal. But you actually find out that there's more to him than just that. And the reason why he's doing some of the things he does ties into things that happened in the past. It also makes him another one of those sympathetic characters where he's a villain, but he's a villain only because the world has shunned him so much. It's one of those things that this is what the world has always saw him to be, so he's filling their expectations,
Right.
It's one of those, I would say that if you get a chance to read some stuff this weekend, this is actually one to check out.
Interesting.
Okay.
All right, cool. So, moving on.
Batman, Superman 3.1, Doomsday.
This I read. What about you, sir?
This was pretty terrible. I don't know about terrible, but it was confusing.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd say terrible. It wasn't good.
It was confusing.
Yeah. There was a couple of twists in there that I really got confused by. Go on.
I was just going to say, this kind of goes along with the whole... what was the other one we read that was had the weird time travel stuff? Oh, Hell. The book
with Hell.
Yeah, Hell. This did kind of the same thing with that, where you're not really sure if a lot of the stuff you're watching or reading, I guess, in my mind it's a movie, but it's really unclear if it's happening in the past or in the future. You're not really sure if you're looking at Supergirl's parents in the past, or if you're looking at great grandparents in the future, retelling the story of what happened with Kal-El, you know, when he fought Doomsday, or if this is some other Doomsday story. Like, it was really weird. It didn't really explain anything. I just kind of felt like it was a mess. Like, it needed to focus itself better than what we got. And I just really didn't know if this is supposed to be a history or a... Yeah, this was, like I said,
what it
seemed
to me was that they were dancing around the abbreviated continuity that we all know. They were trying to deal with that, just as we were saying before about, you know, how long, you know, what counts in the Batman continuity anymore. So when we deal with this, I don't know for sure. Has Doomsday been established in Superman continuity yet in New 52? Or not?
I thought they talked about that in the comic.
Yeah, I thought that
they referenced. The death
scene, yeah, the day he died. Yeah, they've talked about it. But the thing is, the way this story is told is it opens up as if it's on Krypton in the past, talking about when Doomsday first appeared. And they did a story in the 90s where Doomsday had been this device created on Krypton, and that's why he was looking for Superman, you know, whatever, all that kind of stuff. Right. And so you thought that maybe that's what it was, but then they start telling the legend of him, and the legend of him has him fighting Superman, but it's so...
Right, like, it's a little bit of four...
Yeah, it's like a legend. It's mm-hmm. like the legend. So it's the difference between who, you know, Robin of Locksley was and who Robin Hood is in the stories.
Right.
It's like the difference between who Superman is and who this character was they're telling the legend about. So then it can't be on Krypton. It's got to be something in the future.
Right.
But, you know, like I said, that's where I get this whole, like, I'm confused by it. I don't know what to make of it.
I said, they're kind of dancing between the raindrops because one of the panels shows, I guess, the New 52 version of Power Girl, Supergirl, Superboy, Steel, you know, like kind of going back to the Fall of the Superman. So, Rise of the Superman, I think it was called.
Reign
of the Superman. Oh, goodness. Yeah. That was Soul Strike 3. You know, that when I joke about this and I make kind of these snide comments like that, yeah, they're kind of they're hinting at what came before, but just sort of revealing just enough to say, hey, we remember this happened, but we're trying to establish it in the New 52. So that's how it came off to me. It was just really tough to make sense of. You know, the art was okay. It's Brett Booth, so it was okay for the most part. But like you said, a lot of it was really tough to understand because of the jumping around.
Well, let's be fair. No one likes Brett Booth's artwork.
It's okay.
Lies.
It's okay. It's okay. It's not the greatest, but it's okay.
Tim, you're going to have to read this just because Brett Booth did the artwork.
I'll get to it probably in 2 weeks. But I will be reading it just because of that. I saw some preview pages online, and it didn't even look like his art. Maybe it's a different inker, but I think he still had Norman Rackman, who always inks him, I think.
I don't know.
Oh, that's going back to Image days, man.
All right, next up.
You got it.
Next Move up. On. Batman The Dark Knight, 23.4, The Joker's Daughter.
I heard this was a hot 3D cover, though. Like, people were looking for this one.
Well, yeah, because it's a Joker thing. So everyone's like, oh, wow, new Joker character. Mm. Except she's not the Joker's daughter.
Right.
She's just some crazy girl that goes into the sewer, which, by the way, they already established in Killer Croc that Killer Croc is commanding the sewer, yet she happens to find this hippie enclave hiding out in the sewer that she decides to hang out with and take control of. And everybody in this group, they share all their food and whatever, and they're all dirty and grungy, except for the guy who leads them, who wears this brilliant gold jacket and is perfectly manicured and is super ass friendly, yet no one takes advantage of him. And this girl just randomly, while going through the sewers, happens to find Joker's face floating in the sewer. So she picks it up and puts it on and declares that she's now Joker's daughter. That's the only connection to the Joker, is she happens to randomly find his face. His face didn't wash out to sea. It didn't get eaten by rats. It didn't sink to the bottom. Apparently, Joker's face just floats along the sewer until someone picks it up and puts it on.
It fell in water, so what else would you expect it to do?
Well, this is just, like, this to me was kind of the example of what's wrong with the whole Villains Month, because they found the weakest possible tie-in to an established character to add someone new. It became the hot speculators book that people are paying. They were paying $30 for it before it even came out. Now that it's out, it was like $100 people were trying to pay for it and whatever on eBay.
It's her first appearance.
Yeah, and it's got no connection.
Right. And the cover is actually not that bad looking, you know, in terms of the
she's
TV
in
effect.
Well, and the character is appearing in Catwoman. And yeah. So to me, here's the problem. It's because Catwoman, what, she can't face the Joker? She can't have an established male character? They have to generate this random female character in order for a female book character to go up against. You know what I mean? Like, that's part of the problem is when they start doing that thing. Where it's like, if I have a book with a strong female character, she should be able to take on any male character you come up with. You shouldn't have to randomly generate a female character for her to fight. Because then you're making the character by default something less when you say she can't handle the big guys, so we're going to make some random female for her to fight. And like to me, this and like I said, she just she finds Joker's face in the sewer and she puts it on, and now she's Joker's daughter.
I can hear the contempt is just dripping from the mic.
Dorkika says, "It floats, dirt. It all floats. When you're down here with me, you'll float too." Pennywise.
And, but, you know, again, they already established in the Killer Croc book that Killer Croc is in charge of the sewers, and he knows everything that happens down there. He knows everybody who's traveling through it.
How is Killer Croc the lord of the sewers when hasn't Catwoman been dealing with sewers in her book and some underground society?
Now, you got to be green to rule the sewers like the turtles, so they stick a croc down there.
Enough of this.
Yeah, moving on.
This book sucked. All right.
Detective Comics 23.4, Man Bat.
I skimmed this.
They really had four issues of Detective Comics.
Month. And look, it's the same Batman. Look, there's Batman, and then look, it's the same Batman. Batman on the ground, Batman on the ground.
Oh. Yeah.
So, yeah, there's another one where they stole the Batman from another Batman. All right. Anyway, I read it. It was okay. I don't know.
I skimmed it. I just saw that. You know, whatchamacallit, Kirk Langstrom was running into issues with being, I guess he wanted to be a hero, but wasn't, and was losing control. And
well, his ex-wife was actually a spy. She was trying to steal his formula. And she was working on her own formula, and it turned her into She-Bat, or whatever they call her.
She-Bat.
And so he combined their formulas together, and he's been working on some sort of combination of the two of them, and he's becoming more and more feral every time he changes and losing his humanity. At the beginning of the book, you know, you're getting pages out of his diary where he's making notes, and it's like, oh, my dearest, I can't believe that she would have turned her back on me. We had forever and a day, and blah, 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 and, you know, all the geek poetry that you write when you break up with somebody. And then by the end of the book, he's writing just stuff like hungry, tired, find food, you know, like that.
And claw marks at the end.
Z is for cookie.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's a good one.
So, I mean, it carried on everything they've already established, and, you know, they've made it clear that he's a character that they're going to be going back to a couple more times. So they've done what they had to do with him to move him along. But I mean, it didn't really break a whole lot of new ground. It didn't really, it didn't recap his story if you weren't familiar with what happened in Detective. So it's not good for someone who's new to the character. And if you're already familiar with the character, it didn't really add anything to it. So it was one of those that was just kind of there.
All right.
Next okay, up is next? Green Lantern 23.4, Sinestro. We'll be reading that.
I read this. It was a really straight history lesson on Sinestro.
Who wrote it?
Give me a second here.
Be curious. Was it Robert Venditti?
I've got it. Where's that? Here it is. It is...
Matt Kent. Matt Kent.
Superstar writer Matt Kent.
Yeah.
Sure is.
Right, and the art is actually halfway decent because it's Dale Eelstrom. So it made for a positive reading experience that Dale Eaglesham, you know, like an accomplished artist, was doing this.
So what was strange about the origin?
No, it wasn't strange. It's a straight retelling, basically. It's pretty textbook.
Yeah, this is what I think most people expected out of Villains Month, is what this book was. This retold his origin, kind of everything.
Almost blow by blow, right?
Yeah, pretty much up to where he's at now.
Right.
I like that cover.
Yeah, Billy Tan. Is that his name, Billy Tan?
No, he did the cover.
I think yeah. So.
Did X-Men for a long time?
Yes.
Yeah. It basically told you who he was before he became a Green Lantern. It recapped his becoming of a Green Lantern, recapped his fall from grace, building the Sinestro Corps, becoming a Green Lantern again, losing it again, and taking off into the deep space. So this was pretty much the book that you expected when they announced Villains Month, and it played out, I think, really well.
Agreed.
Yeah, this is a good one for the shelf. This is a good one to keep, and you know, every so often just kind of go back and remind yourself of the history of Sinestro.
Right. Like I was saying, it's pretty much blow by blow, and I don't think they really altered much of Sinestro's origin at all in the New 52. So.
Yeah, because they did the whole thing with Abensur's sister.
Right. Is that new or different?
Nope. Although I don't know if that may have been a Geoff Johns thing that he did, you know, a decade ago.
Okay.
So it's not
right when he first took over Green Lantern. Okay.
Right. Right. So it's not you know from
it's
the
not like old school canon, right?
Right. But it's definitely stuff that's been around forever. So just kind of grouped it all together and put it in one friendly package that you could easily digest.
I agree that this is definitely a friendly package, probably one of the friendlier Villains Month books out there.
Okay. Next up we have Justice League 23.4 Secret Society.
Which I enjoyed.
This was a good one.
Yeah.
Because it really sets up, you know, this is the I don't want to call it the origin, but that's sort of, I mean, it's an in-depth explanation of the Secret Society.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is the spoiler.
Right.
Like, this is the one that gives you all the history, all the backstory, tells you where they came from, how they got there, who exactly the outsider was, which it was Alfred on the other Earth, you know, just like right. We all knew. It explains why he's white-skinned. It explains how he came to this universe. It just lays everything out there. This is another one that I was really looking forward to when they announced Villains Month, and this one lived up to my expectations.
Dope.
Pretty much another blow-by-blow explanation. So that was probably one of the more informative issues out there.
Okay, I see a tweet about David S. Goyer, NBC, and Warner Brothers developing Constantine television series.
Ugh.
Is that really necessary?
Doesn't have Keanu Reeves in it.
No.
Must make so many shows.
You know, God forbid. You know, they see Marvel have a little bit of success with the TV show, and now let's greenlight everything.
Well, but to be fair, they did have Smallville on for a decade.
True enough.
And Green Arrow doesn't seem to be going anywhere. So.
True enough.
So it says Warner Bros. TV and DC Comics are on a roll this development season with a third high-profile project, Constantine, a drama based on the characters in the DC Comics John Constantine stories, has sold to NBC with penalty, whatever that means. The go-to writer for Warner Bros. Feature DC adaptations, Daniel Cerone and David S. Goyer. Constantine centers on John Constantine, an enigmatic and irreverent con man turned reluctant supernatural detective who is thrust into the role of defending us against dark forces from beyond.
Sure, why not?
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
More breaking news. But anyway, so Justice League of America 7.4, Black Adam.
Did you read this, Dirk?
Yep, I read this today.
Shouldn't Black Adam have been in the Justice League book and just in Secret Society in the Justice League of America book? Since the Secret Society first debuted in the Justice League of America, that's what they fought.
I think it's, you know, you put Secret Society in Justice League because they are a key part of the Forever Evil.
Right.
So that's going to tie in there. And I think Black Adam is in this book because he's going to continue on in America or with those characters going forward, not so much with the main Justice League team. And Black Adam, I really enjoyed this book as well. This, again, kind of, it did a basic recap of his origin, but this was more of a story of Kandahak, I guess you'd call it, the country.
Kandahak.
What's the name of his fictional country?
Kandahar.
No, but it's funny, you know, like when you say it, I think it's Kandak or Kandak, but
yeah,
I think you put an extra syllable in there for made it Kandahak.
Yeah,
it just made it funnier.
But it's more of a story of that nation and those people and how they've been terrorized and how when he's not there, you know, being the Middle East and being a place that's so contentious and how they get it took a lot of modern day stuff that we think of the Middle East and the politics and the rulers and, you know, when no one's in charge, you know, the country kind of feeds on itself and creates all these factions within, you know, what's the difference between a terrorist and a freedom fighter and, you know, that kind of stuff. It dealt with parts of all of those issues. And then it also made Black Adam into one of those characters that he definitely has a moral code and he's definitely trying to achieve something that he thinks is going to be beneficial to his people. Even though the rest of the world looks down on him, you kind of understand his motivations and why he's doing what he's doing and, you know, what his point of view and his frame of reference is. So he's not necessarily sympathetic like a Killer Croc is, who's an outcast from society, because, I mean, he definitely brings it on himself. He has this power and he abuses it for the sake of his people. You know, he's definitely not doing everything the nicest way he could or the only way he knows how. He does it because he's got the ability to, you know, kill people. That's why he does it. But at the same time, though, it made him so you understand his motivations and you understand why he's doing it and how if things were different, he wouldn't act that way. If nobody ever threatened him or ever threatened his country or ever threatened his people, then there would never be a problem with Black Adam. You know, he's just kind of a bee's nest waiting for someone to poke him. And so it was a lot of fun, and I also enjoyed this one a lot this week.
It read quickly. I think it was a good primer on Black Adam, the character, not really understanding. What it doesn't really delve into is his relationship with Shazam.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it doesn't really explore. I thought that was probably the weakest part of this. It doesn't really explain. I guess it's already been touched on in some of the other books, in the Justice League book, stories.
Yeah, the backup stories that told the origin of Shazam, I mean, basically covered all this within the last year. So kind of makes sense that they wouldn't do it all at once. And it didn't show like him 3,000 years ago in front of the tribunal of gods getting the powers and any of that stuff. You just kind of understand where his place in the world is and you kind of understand how he comes back because he was destroyed in Justice League.
So they show how he does come back?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They definitely do.
Yeah, and unlike Metallo, there's more to him than just the story that they had in Justice League.
Right.
Okay. Dork Geeka says, Constantine should be done on cable and done as an extremely dark action comedy. I think Whedon could pull it off.
Interesting.
Next up, we have Superman 23.4 Parasite.
I did not read this. How about you, Derek?
Nope.
Okay, moving on.
Wake, number 4 of 10.
Oh, we missed Tom Strong and the Planet of Peril, number 3 of 6, but I didn't even read that either.
I read the first issue, and that was all I was going to read.
Okay. I dropped off Wake. I haven't read issues 2 and 3, so I have to kind of backtrack and catch up.
I read the first issue, and that was it. I don't think I'll be reading any more of it. You know what? I do want to go back and read American Vampire. I was flipping through some trades of that at Barnes & Noble. I was like, this looks kind of cool.
That one was pretty good. Wake was one of those where I read the first one and I was interested by it, but it definitely felt like he's writing for the trade. So I'm just going to wait for it to be done or almost done. When it gets up to 8 or 9 is probably when I'll start on it. So by the time the final issue comes out, I'll be ready for it and just
to binge do it all like
that. Yeah.
Gotcha.
I'll agree with that because, I don't know, I was lost after the first issue and I was like, yeah, that's it.
Well, the first
issue... There was definitely some whatchamacallit, oceanographer mumbo-jumbo. So...
It felt like it was definitely trying to just give you the reason why these people are together and you understand that there's something weird going on, but you have no idea what or why, and that's kind of the point of the story, is to explain what this creature is that she runs across and why it's there and that kind of stuff. And the idea of the wake, it's not only does it have the nautical term of following behind an event, but also the funeral term of something dies and you remember it. So it just felt, after reading that first issue, that there's just way too much. It's the way it's paced is just too much, that it ends because this is where the issue ends, not because it's like the cliffhanger for the next chapter. It's definitely something that you're going to want to read in one solid one piece. Sitting. Yeah. Gotcha.
All right. And last but not least, Wonder Woman number 23.2. Anybody?
Firstborn. Nope. I will, because since I'm reading Wonder Woman, I will read it, but of course I haven't read anything from DC this week.
It's in my stack to get to this weekend, but I just haven't gotten to it yet.
I'm just waiting for our regularly scheduled books to return.
Yeah, actually, I got a notice this week from Comixology about the stuff that's going to be on sale next week, and I got really excited because I saw the cover for Batwing. And as soon as it took a minute, I just kind of like was, just running down the list, not really paying attention. But I saw the cover for Batwing and something was like, oh my gosh, a character I haven't seen in, it was like forever.
Yeah,
it's like, I can't wait to get back to this story,
Yeah.
That's funny. That is funny. Yeah, 2 months.
All right.
Moving on. Let's see.
Oh, so next up, anything from Dynamite anyone wants to mention?
I will mention, I don't read the series, but kind of like the Green Hornet Shadow series, the Battlestar Galactica has the Chris Eliopoulos variant covers that you can pick up with the Calvin and Hobbes style of what's going on in the book. So
cool.
That's worth grabbing to at least have on your shelf, even if you never read it.
Cool.
Okay. IDW. Let's see, there's G.I. Joe number 8. Can I just mention it just to mention it? Because some people, I'm sure, read it.
Actually, I will say real quick on G.I. Joe, there was a special missions out this week, and I did pick up the digital trades for the first 3 special missions that they put out, the Chuck Dixon stories. Because there was the series right before this one, and then they, a year ago, whatever, they relaunched all the titles again. So I plan on – I like Chuck Dixon's writing, and I like the way he does the Joes when he does the stories. So I plan on getting up to speed on these. So I'm starting my journey down that road.
Okay. Just see, so G.I. Joe, Powerpuff Girls number
1. Hey, you skipped 6. Godzilla, Rulers of Earth number 4. Just real
just
quick.
Spoke up.
Yeah, no, I know. That's why I did. So basically, it's a fairly predictable story right now. This issue was good because it didn't focus on the humans as much. That's the way it always is with Godzilla movies. There's some pretty good monster fighting, monster action in this. The art in this by I gotta look up the artist right now.
Frank?
I want to make sure. Is it Matt Frank?
I'm not sure.
All right, I just want to get there because there's Gary Frank, but I don't think it's Gary Frank.
No, it's not Gary Frank.
I don't get anybody confused. Yeah, Matt Frank. So the art on this was good because it's not nearly as detailed as James Stokoe's art from the great Half Century War limited series, but it's good in its own way because it's streamlined, it's smooth, it doesn't dwell on a lot of the little, you know, on every little scale on every monster. But it definitely provides more than enough detail to get the gist of the textures involved and the scaly armor that the monsters have. So, I thought the action was pretty well choreographed, which is a great thing in these monster.
It's hard to do when you take a movie like that and try to translate it into a comic. It's really difficult to show that type of action without getting bogged down in each and every arm move and, you know, leg move and whatever. So if they can pull something like that off, then they should get some credit.
No, definitely. I definitely would, you know, if anyone's, it's actually fairly friendly to new readers. You could just pick this up and just take a look at it. And then there's a semi cliffhanger with a seemingly new kaiju being introduced. So that's something to read for the next issue. All right.
Okay. So there was Godzilla.
Rulers of Earth.
All right, now we can go to Powerpuff Girls. Which I got one of these and gave it to my daughter just to see what her reaction would be. And I think she read it 3 times in a row. So I have to say that it's a thumbs up for 6-year-old girls.
That's good news.
Okay. So none of the adults here read it.
Did anyone read The Other Dead?
No.
Came out? It's supposedly some sort of new take on the zombie genre. I plan to read it this weekend. I just didn't have a chance to get to it yesterday. I didn't know if maybe anyone else did.
Do we know if the art on the inside looks good? That'll always get me to at least... open it up.
Yes. It's got Kevin Eastman on board.
Let me flip through it.
Dave Dorman did a variant cover that showed Obama holding a whole bunch of machine guns, getting ready to go into battle, and they were going to release this actually 2 weeks ago, and for some reason customs held it up and would not let it into the country the day before September 11th. They claim that they were spraying for moths and they wouldn't let the boxes go through customs until after September 11th. Then they managed to release them.
Mm-mm-mm. I thought I already had that one downloaded, but I don't. So maybe I'll check for it later. Star Trek number 25.
Yeah. This was
y'all,
good.
I was going to say, one of y'all read Star Trek, I thought.
Yeah, that's me.
Okay.
This is one that ties directly into the movie. So much stuff of the Klingons, the Section 31, all of that stuff that happened in the movie comes into play. In the original timeline, Khitomer was a place where they had a peace accord between the Klingons and the humans, and that's where they, you know, came together and decided to not be at war anymore, and that's why you had Worf on the Enterprise and Next Generation, all that kind of stuff. In the new timeline, the Klingons have decided they are going to take Khitomer for themselves, and they're building an outpost, and the Romulans have taken the technology from the first movie, from Nero's ship, and have put it into their Romulan ships. And they attack Khitomer, they kill all the Klingons, and they're trying to start a war between the Klingons and the Romulans. And so, of course, the Enterprise has no idea that all of this is going on, and they step in the middle to try to make peace. And Captain Kirk is seemingly killed, but probably not, at the hands of a Klingon. And it ends on that cliffhanger. So this is one of those where, you know, longtime Star Trek geeks can get their, you know, alternate universe nerd hat on and look at all the changes that are going on. But at the same time, because
the nerd rage.
Yeah, but it's being overseen by one of the guys who was a producer on the movies. So it is, this is canon. Stuff, whatever happens in the third movie is going to build on these events that are happening in the comics now. So
you heard it here.
The other nerds who love the movies, then they definitely need to be following up on this because this is continuing that story on bluntly. And and it's just I love it. And also, this cover here is the first time that the unmasked Klingons are shown in the comic series because they had to hide them before the movie came out, because that was one of the big reveals for the movie, is how the Klingons look different this time around. So the Klingons have more of a look of who's the guy in 300, the African king that attacked Sparta. I can't.
Oh, you mean the Iranian king? Yeah, he's Xerxes.
Yeah, Xerxes. So they've taken that kind of look, is what they've kind of modeled them after. They've got all the body piercings and the facial tattoos and that kind of stuff going on in the Klingon Empire in this version of the world. So I enjoyed it. Definitely a thumbs up if you're a Star Trek nerd.
I'd like to take a look at that. That's interesting. How far back does the tie-in to the movie go in the series, or is it all tied in?
Actually, if you go back, it's either 2 issues or 4 issues. I forget what it was. But if you go back 2 issues or 4 issues, it's called After Darkness.
Ah.
So the movie was Into Darkness, then you had After Darkness, and then you go into Kittimer Conflict.
Gotcha. Okay, cool.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, number 26, part something of City Fall.
Right, I read this. I think it's part 5. It was good. It was good. It moves the story along.
Yeah, I'm enjoying City Fall. Enjoying Turtles, period, right now. Glad I jumped on to the series when I did. This has... We check in with all the Turtles. Shredder and his Foot Clan take on... I forget the other ninja group that they're feuding with.
The Savate group?
Yeah, Savate. And they capture their leader. And Master Splinter does a job for Old Hob to get his help. And let's see, Transformers Prime Beast Hunters, number 5. Well, actually, skip that one. Transformers More Than Meets the Eye, number 21. Was it this and the other one, other Transformers comic, are telling the same story but different locations or whatever?
Different points of view?
Well, yeah. No. They're different parts of the galaxy.
Yeah. Well, like one team's doing one thing in one book and our team's doing something in the other book.
Right. Right. They're not crossing over. They're not.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. In one book, they're heading off into deep space to try to find the Knights of Cybertron, this legendary group that supposedly were the precursors to the Transformers. And then in the other book, it's the people left behind on Cybertron and trying to rebuild the civilization after the Great War has ended between the Decepticons and the Autobots. So two completely different stories going on between them.
I tried reading, I'm honestly not sure which one it was, but... the story lost me, so the art looked kind of nice.
Beast Hunters is a different series than the other two. This one just started 4 or 5 months ago, and this one ties in more with the cartoon series that's on now.
Oh, that's right, the Beast Hunters.
And this one is centered on the Dinobots. So if you were a fan of the Dinobots growing up, then this is the series for you.
Okay. Image Comics, sort of a big week for them. East of West, number 6. I haven't read it yet.
Have you read any of them?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, it's Hickman, so I didn't know if you were boycotting it or not.
Nah. I mean, I still don't really know what's going on, even though someone explained it to me recently online. Like, I've already forgotten what she told me. Shout out to Empress Geek on Twitter. Might have her explain it again, but yeah. Did either of you read it?
Nope.
Are you reading it, Dirt?
Nope.
Okay.
Neither of you.
I was going to say, I didn't remember you ever mentioning it. What about Fatale or Fatal, number 17?
I want to read this. I want to start from the beginning, though.
What is this about? Anyone
I just know it's a noir series. You know, it's a darker noir type crime series. I just want to read from jump. I don't want to. Jump
I always get Fables 17 and Fatale. Issues in. I get Fatale.
How can you get Fables and Fatale mixed up?
FA. It will start FA.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, do you also mix it with Fantastic Four?
Is Fables an Image book?
No, Fables is Vertigo from DC.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Fables is
fantasy.
Snow White.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Fairy tales.
That's why I said that's the one I probably need to be reading. Okay. Cool. Book I did read, Jupiter's Legacy number 3.
Oh, what'd you think?
Stuff actually happens in this issue. It's like this is the big shocking issue where things happen. Well, I mean, like, the first two issues was sort of like, you know, setting up the characters and the conflicts, and now, like, fighting starts.
Yeah, see, I haven't read number 3 yet, but that's definitely the first two. I just kept waiting for something to happen because it seemed like you had 28 pages or 32 pages of people talking about stuff. Well, you know, we should go do this. Well, this is what we should do. Well, you should leave them alone. Well, you should go do that. And it's like, well, somebody just do something.
Well, you should read it because someone does something.
Someone does something.
I will say it was a, even though, like I said, we've been waiting for something to happen. It all seemed kind of rushed and abrupt. It's like this. Okay, you disagree or you have different viewpoints on things. Does it really have to come to violence?
Well, yeah. Otherwise, it's not interesting.
I guess. And boy, does it get violent.
Well, okay, good. Violence is my bag, so I'll check it out this weekend.
Yeah, so read it after the show's over. Rat Queens, number 1. I have not read. Actually, I didn't even plan on reading it, but I don't know. It's a number 1. I kind of feel like I need to at least flip through it. And actually, I'm going to flip through it now and see if the art looks good in it.
It looks like, I think it's the same guy on the inside that did the cover.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That'd be a plus.
Rock Up Church.
Okay, actually, it does look kind of nice. Colors are nice on it, too.
It reminds me a lot of the look of Skull Kickers.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'll try to give this a read. I wonder if it's a limited series or ongoing.
That I don't know.
Yeah, it doesn't. Well, I guess it would have said on comic list if it was limited. What is Revival number 14? What is Revival? Anyone have an idea?
Nay.
I watched a YouTube video earlier today. It was like an older one. Like they were doing like their top 5 animated movies, and like before they between the number 1 and number 2 choice, they did like a little quick break and did like a quick reviews of comics that came out that week. And there was a book that started with the R, and they did like Dirt does and put the little cover up on the screen in the video. But they said the name of the book really fast, and I rewound it like 5 times, and I still couldn't understand what the guy said. But now it sounded like it might have been Revival, because it was like a picture of like a guy on the cover like shooting a beam up in the air, and I was like, oh, that cover looks kind of nice. So I want to know what the book was. Maybe it was Revival.
I don't think that was the first issue of Revival.
No, it wasn't the first issue.
Oh, okay.
It was just like, it was just a random issue, whatever, of Revival. It might have been like Revival 5.
You know, this is one of those that I read the first couple issues, and I meant to keep reading it, but, you know, it got away from me for a couple months, and, you know, now it's on issue 14. But it was kind of a horror-based book, people coming back from the dead and stealing souls and stuff like that, but it's been a long time since I've read it, so.
This kid just poked her mom in the eye with her thumb. And now I'm assuming her mom or an older woman, parental guardian or someone, and now this woman's eyeball is hanging out of her eye.
Well, I told you I was planning on reading it. You don't have to hard sell me on it anymore.
violence. Oh, she put her eye back in a couple of pages later. That doesn't sell you on this book, people. I don't know what will. Okay, let me stop. Before I spoil myself.
All right.
Saga number 14.
Anybody?
Nope.
Not yet, but I will. Since I read the last issue. That was my first issue with Saga.
I have not jumped on this train yet.
So, see if I can still understand what's going on. I don't know if I necessarily say I understand what's going on, but I mean, previous issue, 13? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Was easy enough to follow along with. Sex Criminals number one, Matt Fraction. Oh, and speaking of sex criminals, Roddy Cat just tweeted out on his Tumblr.
Speaking of.
Well, it's a photo from his Tumblr. He says, now, from the sleeves, we'll soon be reading Sex Criminals number one.
All right.
So, for those that don't know, this involves two characters who, when they have sex, time stops for them and freezes. So they decide to use this power together to go rob banks or rob people, be criminals. And basically, the book is mostly from the main female's point of view, her growing up and discovering her powers and trying to, you know, her at first thinking, is this what happens when everyone reaches orgasm? And the kind of funny and hilarious things that happen as a teenager is, you know, exploring her body and trying to figure out, does everyone have these powers or not? And then she runs across a guy that has the exact same ability as her. And, you know, both of them being surprised when they have sex with each other and they're both expecting the other one to be frozen and they realize they're not.
I got that part. I just didn't get the whole we're going to rob banks now. But okay, now I understand what the gist is.
Yeah. I mean, and actually, now you bring it up, there's no like real correlation of how it went from that to let's use these powers for bad.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if you could stop time, what else are you going to do? I mean, you're going to read the encyclopedia and make yourself smarter? No. You're going to go out and steal stuff.
And that, Todd, the Ugliest Kid on Earth, number five.
Which, I skimmed through this just because I saw the cover with the satanic PBS logo and the evil Charlie Rose. And I kind of thought, well, I mean, there's no way they're actually making fun of PBS, right? But then you open it up and they make fun of Marvel. They make fun of public television. They make fun of artists in general. If these guys had ever worked at a large comic book company, it seems like they really did not enjoy it and they want to make sure that they burn every bridge and they never ever go back. They basically have like Joe Quesada sitting at a panel at a comic book convention saying, you know, we keep trying to go after the young people and get young people to buy comics, but it's the old people who've stuck with us for the longest time. So now we're introducing Marvel Old, and they're bringing in playwrights and things like that to write these, long rambling comics. And it skewered so much stuff. This is one of those things. This is issue five. And after flipping through this one, I'm kind of thinking, I probably need to go back and read one.
Cool.
All right.
But I kind of want a t-shirt with that satanic PBS logo on it.
That's funny.
On to Marvel. I'm going to skip A plus X and 12 unless someone did actually read it.
I read it. The lead story was actually halfway decent because anyone who's a fan of Avengers knows that Wonder Man and Beast have a lot of history going back a long way, and it was kind of cool to see them get reacquainted with each other in their current status quos, their respective status quos. So, and kind of go back and forth about how, you know, it's kind of hard to reconcile what they used to be with what they are now, you know, respectively. So,
okay, so that was can you answer something for me real quick then?
Shoot.
I read Avengers just on and off every now and again. Mm-hmm. The last time I saw Wonder Man is he was attacking the Avengers and blaming them for everything that was wrong in the world.
Correct.
So what happened? I mean, is he still doing that?
He made
that?
Nice. He apologized. He realized he was wrong.
And he's on the Uncanny Avengers.
Exactly. Now he's on Uncanny Avengers. He literally apologized and admitted he was wrong.
And that was all it took, huh?
And now he's not
pretty purple. Much.
He's not purple energy anymore, apparently. He has a body.
Right. So.
Huh.
That's that.
His anger management. Right. He's a pacifist now, too.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Well, that was part of the whole thing with, organizing that group to go after the Avengers because, he thought that they were the cause of everything because of all the fighting they were doing.
I think Remender has him in Uncanny Avengers just to kill him off eventually. Because they're teasing some deaths and some upcoming issues of Uncanny Avengers. And if you look at that team, who really are they going to kill off?
Right. Well, he's a pretty easy character to bring back, so he's a prime candidate to kill off.
His brother's been killed a bunch of times, apparently. So.
Right.
Avengers
and the backup, the backup story was actually kind of cool. It had no point to it, but it was actually kind of cool. Between Captain America and Jubilee, of all people.
Yeah.
I honestly just read it and it goes very quickly. It's actually not the worst backup, secondary story that they could have had.
I've given up on A+Its.
I think it's only worth reading if the first story, if the lead story is any good at all. And that's really, that was the point of reading this one, is that I actually could appreciate where the first story was going. Where are they going to put a story like this in the main Avengers books right now, And it's really something that they do kind of need to do, which is kind of reestablish, some of the old relationships, or reestablish those relationships.
But then the story is out of continuity, so it doesn't really matter.
It's not out of continuity. It's just it's there. It's happened at some point, They're part of the Earthbound Avengers group, so it's not. It's technically probably not out of continuity per se. But anyway, getting on to what's really in continuity, Avengers number 20.
Infinity tie-in. I read this and trying to recall what happened. I don't think much really did happen in this. Cap came up with a plan because that's what he does.
There's a lot of there's a lot of back and forth going on in this, trying to figure out what to do next. I don't know if he comes up with a plan, but I guess he does come up with a plan, but it hasn't been quite revealed yet. There's definitely some development among the ex nihili, the multiple ex nihilos that show up, and question the one that was based on Mars. Why are you guys hanging out? Why are you hanging out with the Avengers? And why do you have an Abyss with you and a Night Mask and a Star Brand? And there's all sorts of things. And I think the ex nihili are probably going to turn on the Builders. Turn against the Builders and provide Earth, the Avengers, more firepower. But we'll see where Cap's cliffhanger, the cliffhanger at the end of the issue, definitely leads us in a different direction. I would say unexpected, except this is sort of where a lot of these space operas go. These war type stories go. So I was actually, pretty. I was glad to read this. It moved the story along for the most part. It established what was going on the Kree homeworld and what the immediate aftermath of the last issue, the previous issue of the Infinity Limited series was, which is the Avengers actually winning a battle against the Builders.
What was I about to say? Oh, does Infinity Number 4 come out next week? Is it on a bi-weekly schedule?
I do not know. Let's take a look at the next weeks. Give me a sec.
Avengers Assemble number 19, another Infinity tie-in that I'll probably skip because I don't care about
Spider-Woman. I can just tell you real quick, it was definitely from Spider-Woman's point of view. It's not that necessary to read.
I think I'm going to wait until Warren Ellis jumps. Oh, yeah, I guess I didn't talk about that in the news. Warren Ellis is going to be a co-writer on Avengers Assemble, I think. I think Sue Kelly Sue DeConnick is still going to be riding it with him, and they're going to bring on Spider Girl for something.
So the preliminary list for next week on comiclist.com does not have Infinity number 4 out next week. So it's probably coming out the week after.
Okay, I couldn't remember if it was bi-weekly or not. Dorgeeka says he's slightly confused by Infinity. Is Thanos using the Builder's Chaos to unleash his scheme?
I'd say so. Yeah, pretty much. He's using it as cover.
Because they found out that all the heroes were gone from Earth, or the important ones at least.
Yeah, the main opposition.
Oh yeah, question about Thanos. He wants to kill his seed and all. Isn't Gamora his daughter? I've heard that before.
Quick Google search. We'll see what comes up.
While he's Google searching that, I will bring up Deadpool number 17. I was reading this and then I remembered I don't like reading Deadpool solo. even before this arc with Wolverine and Captain America started, I saw the interviews and discussing the good, the bad, and the ugly. I think that's what this is called.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I was like, oh, cool. That was like a story arc that I would be interested in. Then I read the first issue. I actually liked the first issue. Then I read the second part of it, and I was like, I couldn't even finish it. I read like half of it, and then I just skipped through just to see the pictures and
look at the pretty picture.
Well, just in case something happened that I needed to see. Hmm. But yeah, I think I'm done reading it.
Oh, all right. I don't have much to say about this. I read it. I wasn't all that impressed.
See?
So, yeah, I liked the old series that they ended, and this series just has not grabbed my fondness like the old one did.
Okay. Well, before we move on, according to the always reliable Wikipedia, Gamora is the last of her species, the Zen-Wolberi, who were exterminated by the Badoon in her original timeline. Her species was exterminated by the Universal Church of Truth. Thanos found the child and decided to use her as a weapon. So Gamora was raised and trained by Thanos to assassinate the Magus, the evil alternate version of Adam Warlock. So technically not offspring.
Yeah, Dark Geek's tweet me said Gamora is his adopted daughter. She isn't
there
blood.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
The more you know.
Knowing is half the battle. G.I. Joe.
Guardians of the Galaxy number... Oh, hold on.
You're jumping around.
Well, FF number 12. I don't think anyone reads that.
I try to read it. I do my best. It's just hard for me to keep up with what's going on. I apologize. You know, I definitely... I dropped this off my buy list. It's on my my academic review purposes list. It's just not easy to keep up with right now. I didn't understand half of what was going on in this book. So yeah, not a good sign. Not a good sign, people.
The last issue of Gambit number 17.
Did you read this?
No, but I'm going to go back, since it's over, I'm going to go back and read all the issues now.
Yeah, you should. I won't spoil anything. You should just read it. Get it done with.
Actually, I might just read this one to see what happens at the end.
No, just read the last couple. It's probably worth it just to establish what's going on.
I did read when I took my adventure to Barnes & Noble. I read 15 and I thumbed through 16.
Okay. All right, so you're almost caught up. Okay.
Yeah, they want him to be the leader of the Thieves Guild, right?
Right.
Yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy number 6, which I reviewed on dclicknation.com.
Oh, I didn't have a chance to read that.
CultureNetwork.com. I don't know. If mini rant time.
Oh, okay, go ahead. You have the floor.
So I was going through the Marvel books that were released for early review, and I was like, man, I don't like any of these. But I was like, I need to review something. So since I have a review, I don't know, it's always easy for me to review Guardians of the Galaxy because I just sort of talk about what I don't like in it. that's like a quick review. It was between that and Nova. And I think last time I did a Nova review, not too many people clicked it. So I'm not talking about him anymore. Actually, I need to see how many people actually clicked on this one, too. But I was waiting for Image to release their stuff because I wanted to get a nice early review of, like, Sex Criminals and Jupiter's Legacy out. But then they didn't release their stuff until sometime Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah, they were really late.
I kept going to opening FileZilla, like, every hour, nothing. And, of course, Tuesday I was watching S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff when I got home and didn't have time to read anything. But the plan is to, because reviews can actually go out, doesn't matter when stuff goes out, so I'm going to try to review stuff this weekend and probably post it like Monday or Sunday. But, yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy, what happened in this? More fighting between the team and Angela, Thanos, and Peter Quill talked. And I asked in my review, how did Peter Quill know where to find Thanos? Did he have him on speed dial? And why isn't this tying into Infinity? They're supposed to be the cosmic protectors of Earth. Earth's being invaded, and they're busy on the dark side of the moon, or blue side of the moon, fighting Thanos. Or fighting Gamora. I keep fighting Angela. Infinity the Heist number one of
four. Wait, hold on for a second. Do you feel like Angela coming to the Marvel Universe is a big deal now that you've read Guardians of the Galaxy 6?
No.
It's hard to say. They don't really give, you know, this used to be, you know, what happens in this issue used to take half an issue, which is, you know, the fight between potential allies, you know, like the misunderstanding fight.
Right.
And then, you know, and then they talk to each other, like, oh, wait, we're on the same side. We should team up. You know, this entire issue was just the fight. And that's, to me, that's the downside of this issue is that none of what you were just mentioning is established. None of that, which is necessary, is ever talked about, which is what is she doing here? Why are we seeing her? It's just, you know, showing that she can take on Gamora. Well, we could have seen that in two or three pages, not the entire book. You know, that's, you know, if I fault anyone, it's Bendis on this decompression stuff.
Well, and it's also, they made such a big deal about, like, this was part of the outcome of Age of Ultron, and she's now part of the Marvel Universe, and now here's this Neil Gaiman created character coming into the Marvel Universe, and
he's gonna be co-writing the book.
Yeah, and then once this book comes out, I just heard all of the internet go, eh.
And then he's not even a writer; he's a consultant.
Yeah, and his name's not even on the cover. So, I mean,
why would his name be on the cover? Because he sold the character.
Well, yeah, but he was supposed to be consulting on the story and plotting the story and whatever.
Is he supposed to be doing it on this particular issue, or?
Yeah, the last two.
Oh, okay.
The ones that Angela appears in, which are the last two, and not that this book had much steam to begin with.
Oh no, but it says consultant on the first page.
Yeah, but it's not on the cover. He's saying.
Oh, okay, because it doesn't freaking fit. But okay,
because he was supposed to have been.
Because look at how many names they got over there: it's Bendis, Pacelli, Coypel, Morales, and Ponsor. How are they gonna, you know?
We didn't have a book last month because Sarah Pichelli, I guess, was sick or something, so they had to push it back, and then they had to get.
She caught the con flu. She caught the con disease. You know, the Comic Con disease.
So Coypel did two pages, I think, the ones involving Thanos and Quill. But yeah, Infinity the Heist, one of four. I haven't read it yet. I will.
I skimmed it. It's okay. It's nothing special.
The review that I read of this from another website, so I won't mention them, they basically said that somebody sat down and read Superior Foes of Spider-Man and went, oh, we could do that.
Yeah.
And that's what this is.
I read that same headline for that.
I did not read that, but I can.
But then they said they liked it.
Get that from.
They said it was better.
The characterization was pretty good in this.
They said it was better than
Superior Foes.
Either that or Infinity the Hunt.
The Hunt.
Hmm.
Yeah.
which I could see because The Hunt, nothing really happened in that.
Yeah, if you're going to read one of the two, read this one, not that one.
But the other one has kids with powers in it.
Yeah, who cares?
I will say, before the show, I started reading the Superior Spider-Man team-up from this week. I like that artist, Mundu or something, his name
is? Yeah, Mundo. Well, here, I'll pull it up since we're talking about it. I actually have not had a chance to read this one all the way through yet, which is, I've had it for a week and a half, and I just never got around to it. But I agree on the artwork. It has the look of an animated style on the inside.
Yeah.
It almost looks like freeze frames of an animated movie.
Agreed.
I think I'm just starting to get kind of Spider-Man fatigue, where it's like they've done him in so many books and recently, and every book is, you must read this one because something's going to happen with the character and all of that kind of stuff, that after a while I'm just kind of getting to the point where I'll get to it. Yeah, I'll read it eventually.
Because especially with Superior Spider-Man coming out twice a month.
Yeah, well, and it's like when they did Amazing and they, canceled all the other Spider-Man books and you only had Amazing that you technically had to read to get Peter Parker's story, there was no other book. And then they decided to come out with Avenging Spider-Man right there at the end, which is what is this, Superior Spider-Man team-up. But it's like when you were reading Amazing, that was really all you had to read. And now with team up, it's like they're trying to make it the book that you kind of have to read because this is him interacting with the rest of the Marvel universe,
right?
Where his book is more of the personal story, but you're getting basically his whole story if you read the two books together, and it's just kind of getting to the point where now it's three books a month that you have to read instead of just the two. And
what's the third?
Because they do Superior twice a month.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So.
Yeah, it's starting to become too, like you said, it's starting to become too much Superior. It's like once they saw how polarizing he was, we just got to take advantage of this and
pile on.
Yeah, but again, I wonder if this was Marvel's idea or did some other writers come up and like, hey, let me pitch for this idea with Superior Spider-Man. Like how Mighty Avengers, like he's on Mighty Avengers and Spider-Man team up and there's another.
He was Spider-Man. In regular Avengers too for a while.
I'm glad they took him out of that.
Yeah.
Anyway, Nova number 8. This will be tying into Infinity, finally. So you know how.
Earlier, I hated this issue, by the way.
You know how earlier
I'm done with this.
How earlier Dirt talked about, Catwoman's a female, so they have to have a female antagonist for her fight. Yeah. So we have Nova. He's a kid. Let's introduce the kid of her villain for him to fight. That's also a female that probably will become a love interest for him later on.
Gets a gong.
I can only assume this issue. This and Guardians of the Galaxy, each week or each month when they come out, nothing happens in these books.
It'll get worse.
And these were the two big hot books a year ago.
Better pay attention to them because they're going to be in movies,
These are going to be important. These are laying the foundation for the future of the Marvel Universe.
The Earth is off limits. And
so, what's funny in this issue, maybe what was so off-putting to me in this issue was that they were dropping hints of the bad things that happened to Richard Rider in the Cancerverse. And as soon as I started reading, they started talking about that and not telling us anything more about it, like see this for future developments or anything like that.
Don't want you going back to read those old issues.
Yeah, I just got really annoyed and I wanted to smack somebody.
Yep.
Not happy with this.
Punisher, The Trial of the Punisher, 1 of 2.
This was good. I wanted
to read this. This was in my read pile, and I didn't have time because I had to go run errands tonight. But this was the one I was going to read before the show and just didn't have time for.
This was good. Did you read this, Tim?
Not yet.
Okay, so I won't
spoil it. I saw you writing down praise on the creators on Twitter the other day.
Yeah, so I mentioned Mark Guggenheim, who who's been in television, but he's done some comic book stuff too. He's also an attorney.
And, what?
Yes. And he even does an intro, and this is sort of what sparked me to shout out the attorneys who are into comics and doing comic book stuff. He does a full page, like letter to the reader, talking about, you know, being an attorney and how, you know, how that was sort of the impetus for the story, and how he's even influenced by Bill Mantlo, the creator who was in an accident, who was like laid up in a nursing home because he's suffered brain damage. Bill Mantlo used to write Rom Space Knight, one of my favorites, and The Incredible Hulk, you know, back when, you know, they were doing some really good Hulk stuff. Bill Mantlo, I guess, was an attorney. I didn't even have a chance to Google this. No time. But I guess he was an attorney also and became a comic book writer as well. So I won't spoil, but the story, it's actually pretty well done. Lainel Yu does the art on this, so it's definitely well put together. The cover was kind of cool. You know, I won't spoil anything by talking about the cover. The cover is definitely reminiscent of Jim Lee's Punisher War Journal from back in like the early 90s, late 80s.
Yep.
That's definitely reminiscent of Jim Lee's Punisher War Journal. So, you know, I was definitely jazzed by seeing that cover. So I would recommend anyone who's a Punisher fan, you know, it's obviously, you know, I think it's a two-issue series. So
yeah, it's only two issues.
Right. You definitely don't have to have any really – you don't have to have much of a history with the character to even read this.
Although now I'm sad that you mentioned Punisher War Journal because I want Microchip to come back.
Yes, I remember Microchip. They've killed him off a number of times. I don't know.
Yeah, but they made him evil last time. And then
oh, is that what
– Yeah. He became a traitor.
Who was writing that? Was that Ennis?
I don't know.
Was it after Ennis?
That's when I stopped reading Punisher. I was like, okay. After you do this to Microchip, you expect me to keep buying this book every month? I say no.
Yeah, no. Microchip was definitely an integral part of the late 80s, early 90s Punisher. So that stinks. But anyway, you know, this issue was very well done. You know, I'm a fan of Lainel Yu's work. And Mark Guggenheim wrote a pretty good story, and I shouted him out using my actual Twitter handle, the Twitter handle that I use to talk sports and not comics. You know, I shouted him out from my Twitter handle, him and Marjorie Liu and Charles Soule, or Soule, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but
Soule.
Charles Soule and even Koi Pham. Shout them out for being fellow attorneys who were, you know, creative in the comic book world.
And now they're going to sue you.
No, for what reason?
Because they can.
So that was, you know, that was pretty cool. And like I said, when you read this, there's a cool little letter to the reader at the end of it from Guggenheim. So. All right. Alrighty, moving on. Let's see what else we got.
Scarlet Spider number 22. I read it. It's just leaning to the end of the series.
Kane. It was versus, interesting. Kraven.
Kraven the Hunter, yes.
Yeah, to me.
It's reminiscent of, you know, the, whatchamacallit, was it the last hunt, the final hunt?
Kraven's last hunt,
that's what it was.
To me, the artwork on this, though, is just, there's something off.
Like, it had two set of artists.
Oh, was it? I got two.
Yeah.
I kind of remember what
the art, the last, about. Whoever did last, like, two or three pages was different than.
Oh, there's three.
Okay, three.
David Baldion, Pat Olaf, and I'm not sure who Green is.
Oh.
I know who Pat Olaf is. He used to do which one? Untold Tales. You remember Untold Tales of Spidey with Kurt Busiek?
Yeah. Something. What happened with Tim? He got attacked by bees or something. What happened?
Oh no. All I heard was the movement. I didn't.
Someone dropped a beehive in his living room or something. I'm not sure what happened.
Got the twist tie I was playing with.
Oh yeah, better stop the show and pick that up.
Yeah, seriously, you know, interrupt everything. I'm like, what happened? What?
That would just butt the hell out of me the rest of the night if I didn't pick it up now.
We learn something new about our colleague every night, every show. Oh mercy. So yeah, I see what you mean by the inconsistency of the art.
And it's probably because the series is coming to an end.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens.
Yeah, unfortunately.
get through some of this stuff. Ultimate Comics Spider-Man. Oh, wait. But yeah, we already talked about Superior Spider-Man Team Up. So, yeah, Ultimate Comics Spider-Man 27. Read that yet.
It's good stuff. I won't spoil it. It's good stuff. It just keeps the storyline moving forward. Dirt, did you read this?
Yeah. I hate how it feels, though, like it's coming to an end. Like, it feels like it's building up to...
Oh, with the big team up?
Yeah.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
It feels like it's wrapping up a lot of loose ends, not only from Miles Morales' history, but also some of the old Ultimate Peter Parker stuff is all kind of wrapping together and coming to a head. And, you know, with Cataclysm coming and how all the books are now going to be technically being canceled and retitled as part of Cataclysm, you know, this does feel like they're coming to the end of the Ultimate Universe. But this is good. This book is a knock out of the park every month, and this one doesn't disappoint, and it doesn't drop the ball.
Yeah, this is a fun take on on Taskmaster, too. He's definitely a combination of a couple of different characters.
Yeah, and I guess he appeared previously... I read something online about it in maybe it was an Ultimates previous series or something. Okay. I don't remember, but apparently he's appeared before.
Okay.
But when I saw him in this one, I was like, well, I don't know who this guy is supposed to be. Is he supposed to be like a version of the Punisher or what? And then they mentioned he's Taskmaster, and it's like everything kind of made sense at that point. His power set is different from normal universe. It's different in the Ultimate Universe, but it totally makes sense with the character and who he is. He basically absorbs the person's power and then can use it back against them. So every time they hit him, kind of like a Doomsday, he gets hit, he gets stronger, he can hit back. If they shoot energy at him,
absorbing man, right?
Yeah, he absorbs the energy and he can shoot it back at him. And so that kind of, you know, whenever you have a villain like that where they have to think outside the box on how to defeat him, it's always fun to see how they figure out how to do it. And I loved how Miles Morales remembers that he has the Venom power, his spider sting. At the, you know, the most random moment, he hits him and the guy kind of freaks, you know, jumps back like, what the hell is that? And he's like, oh yeah, I totally forgot. I have this other spider power.
You know, he actually doesn't even use it consciously. I think he's like spaced out or knocked out when it happens.
Yeah, he's losing the fight.
And right.
Taskmaster is about to kill him and basically crushes.
About
him.
To pull. Yeah, he's
about to pull his
mask
off.
That's what it was. And so, you know, the second he makes contact, he gets zapped with the venom blast. You know, kind of like an unconscious.
He's like, I forgot I had that power, and I'm like, yeah, I forgot you had that power. You haven't used it in so long.
Yeah, so it's good, Tim. We haven't spoiled too much. You definitely can still read this and be surprised at everything.
Yeah, so much stuff to read.
And the artwork is again beautiful.
Dave Marquez.
Yeah, he's consistent. I give him lots of points for being consistent.
Like, I wonder if this actually does end, if they do fold the entire Ultimate Universe. I don't know where he's going to go, but he definitely seems to be one of those guys who's got a bright future that'll be around for hopefully years and years and years and years.
I could come up with a book, just not right now. I'd have to think about it. Because, yeah. Would it be... I actually wouldn't mind him taking over... Uncanny X-Men.
Well, I was thinking X-Men in my head, but I want to see him do the X-Men in costumes. Like, you know, when they're wearing the spandex costumes, they look like a team.
As opposed to what they all look like now.
I could see him taking over for Ed McGuinness on Amazing X-Men once he finally leaves that book. Because I'm pretty sure he won't be on it long. Ed McGuinness, I mean.
Right.
So that'll be the X-Men. That's the Jean Grey school teachers, but they're outside of school doing missions and stuff. So they'll have costumes. Mm-hmm. And Nightcrawler and Firestorm.
That's Firestar. Right. Firestar.
Because Firestorm is that character from DC that his powers have nothing to do with fire.
Well, his head's on fire.
Okay. Why is his head on fire?
Because it looks like a nuclear reactor.
So what does that have to do with his powers?
His powers are atomic in origin.
I so can't.
It says a big atomic reactor.
Sure. Have you ever seen a nuclear power plant? That's what it's
called. Calm Manipulation Man.
Actually, everyone would get him confused with Multiplication Man, who was a character on PBS several years ago.
Or Metamorpho. Oh my god, okay. That's too funny. That is
too funny. End of rant.
We just had a quick rant on Firestorm. And
anytime Firestorm comes up, I'm going to bring that up.
Oh my gosh.
Uncanny Avengers number 12.
King Book.
I don't know, it's kind of hit a holding pattern.
Well, there's definitely a lot of, you know, exposition. There's lots of explaining, you know, kind of setting the stage. And I thought that's what the purpose of this book was. This is our man Sal LaRocca's debut on this title, right?
What was that? Oh, yeah, he just did fill-in art for this issue.
Oh, just fill-in? Okay.
Yeah.
I thought he was maybe taking over.
Nah. He's actually leaving Cable and X for us.
Right.
They haven't said what book he's moving to.
I thought he was taking this over, but this is only curious. Okay.
Steve McNiven's actually about to come on, I believe. I don't think that's in November. In November, McNiven comes on once the dying starts.
Gotcha. Once this arc is over, I gotcha.
Yeah, because this is the Apocalypse Twins. Yeah, McNiven comes on the Ragnarok now, which is the next arc.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, this is a lot of, you know, small character bits, you know, fighting the horsemen and, you know, just, you know, basically setting the stage for whichever character is going to end up falling, you know, whichever Uncanny Avenger is going to end up, you know, taking the dirt nap, or at least the temporary dirt nap.
I'm tired of everyone manipulating Scarlet Witch.
Yeah, I agree.
Why?
Why am I tired of it?
Yeah.
I mean,
It's
already been done. That was the whole point of what's it, Children Crusade and No More Mutants and
right.
Yeah, and the first arc was the Red Skull.
Yeah. And she even mentioned that the Scarlet Witch even mentions in this issue. It's like, I'm tired of being, you know, manipulated and pushed around. And you know, it's still happening.
I agree with you, Dork Geekus. He says he wouldn't mind David Marquez drawing Battle to Atom tie-in books would have made the books readable. And we're mostly talking about Wolverine and the X-Men, which will be the next book.
All right, let's move on.
Because it had a good artist on it.
Giuseppe Camuncoli.
Thank you. He's been doing...
He's a Paisan.
He's been doing Spirit of Spider-Man, and his art, and that was great, has been great, but here, not so much.
It's because they're not all wearing uniforms. I agree. You know what? It's funny that you mentioned this, Dirt. I agree with you. You know, they don't look like X-Men. They're all wearing individual clothes.
I don't like the Uncanny X-Men cast, for one.
Yeah.
I mean, that. I don't know. Being a longtime X-Men fan, even though this was a period back when I wasn't reading comic books anymore, back when the young X-Men and was it the new X-Men and young X-Men, whatever they called them, back with like the Halion and whoever else were on that team back then. Like they already have a whole bunch of young mutants around, but yet they're creating these new ones. You've got to create these new mutants, which is fine, I guess, but they're just uninteresting. Gold balls. It's not. Shark boy.
There's a great line in here about gold balls, though, from Deadpool. Yeah. I thought that was pretty funny.
These are the characters we have now in the school. At least the characters they're focusing on.
Right.
Snot and gold balls and.
Well, no, didn't Snot go to the Hellfire Club?
Yeah.
He went through the Siege Perilous and came back with a bigger schnoz than he had before.
Who else is in Wolverine the X-Men?
Well, here's the thing with the book. Like, I'm not a regular reader of the X-Men books, but I am reading Battle of the Atom. I am at least, you know, giving it my best shot.
For academic review purposes.
And, well, you know, I work in the comic book store. I can read anything. So right. I just figured, why not? And I'm not someone who generally pays attention to the credits on a book. So if the artwork changes halfway through the book and a different artist is suddenly drawing it, it takes me by surprise because I usually don't, you know, I look at stuff all day. I don't pay attention. But I was flipping through this book and it opens and I read the first, I don't know, 6 pages, 8 pages, whatever. Everything seemed fine. And then suddenly when it goes to the page where it shows the big psychic battle happening in the sky between the two sides, it looked like it changed artists.
And I was going to say, is it still Cap Giuseppe? He's the only artist on it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, he did the entire book. But
it doesn't even look like his art. It doesn't even look like his art from Superior Spider-Man.
And it's like when I got to that point, I started, you know, and it, well, here's the thing. It says that he's the penciler, and then Andrew Curie is the finisher.
Mm.
So it kind of leaves up in the air, like, how much he had actually done the artwork before he handed it off to the other guy. So he very well may have just kind of outlined. Outlined where the body's going to be, and, you know, you fill in the details.
He drew the ovals and circles.
Right. So it's the first several pages look fine, and then suddenly it just it shifted, and it looked completely different. And for the next, you know, I don't know, 6 pages, 7 pages, whatever, it looked like a different artist. And I flip back to the front, and I'm like, no, it's just the one guy. Like, I don't know what happened, but suddenly in the middle, it just looked rushed. And every time those big psychic battles are happening, it just looks like they drew a bunch of lines on the page and drew kind of an outline of a person and just, like, you know, wrote some note, like, you know, fill in with a bunch of random colors, you know. But then when you get back to the pages where it's the characters are sitting around the X mansion trying to figure out what their next move is going to be or anything like that, then it goes back to looking fine. So I don't know if maybe he just can't draw ghost-like figures in the sky fighting each other. Maybe that's his problem. I don't know, but it just felt inconsistent going through the book. As far as the story went, I thought this was great. I loved Deadpool's speech. I love the twist at the end. You found out something else. I love the debate between Kitty Pryde and future Kitty Pryde and how they're talking about Jean Grey and future Jean Grey and young Jean Grey. And Scott makes the comment about she's old, young Jean Grey. And I can't believe I just said that. And, you know, the story I thought was great. It's just the artwork just felt inconsistent throughout the book.
Boom. I do like the word it ends.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Put it that. And finally, for Marvel, Young Avengers number 10, which I have not read. I will, though.
I read this. It's still more the mother storyline.
Yeah.
So it's just, this is, you know, I've complained about similar issues with some of the other books that we've been reviewing, that some of these storylines just taking too long to end. It's too long. You know, how many trade paperbacks, man? How many?
And that's it for Marvel. And I think I only have one more company to mention, because I think Valiant had something out this week, or did they? Yes, they did. Valiant, Bloodshot and Hardcore number 14. Which I'm going to – did I miss 13, I think? What do I have saved?
I noticed that they switched writers, and that now Christos Gage is writing it.
Who's on it now?
Okay.
Christos Gage.
Okay.
Christos.
Is he
– So I'm
trying to think. Is he
I'm planning on giving this one a chance.
Villain writer. Because usually y'all just always do fill-in work for people?
No. He's carried one.
Is that Chris Yost I'm thinking about? Who's doing the fill-in arc or the one fill-in issue for Flash when Brian Bucciolato and Francis Manapul leave? I always get Yost and Gage mixed up. Disregard me.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm like, Christos and Chris? Yeah, I guess. But, you know, I always, you know, when I see Christos Gage, I'm like, oh, he's Greek.
What you were saying, Dirt?
I don't know, was I?
You were saying you saw they changed writers and...
Yeah, they changed writers, so I figured I'd give it a shot now that there's a new creative team. I didn't really care for the title before.
Hmm.
So now that they...
It says on the cover, all new title, all new team, all
new because it was just Bloodshot, but they added the Hardcore on it. And so,
I loved old Valiant. I loved, you know, 90s Valiant. That was some good stuff for me when I was growing up. But the new Valiant without Solar Man of the Atom, without Magnus Robot Fighter, without Ryan the Future Force. I mean, it just doesn't feel the same to me. It just doesn't feel right. Like there's this big hole in the middle of their universe. So I just couldn't get into it when they relaunched everything, but I may give this one title a chance.
This is a good jumping on point. I might give this, I'll try to read this ahead of next week to try to put a quick review in about it.
Okay. So click pick of the week. I try to give this some thought.
This is hard for me. You go ahead, Tim.
Oh, I was just going to say, I tried to give this some thought, but don't have anything just yet. I mean, Sex Criminals was cool. There's a lot of stuff on here that I haven't read yet that I know I'll like Ultimate Comics Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
But for like stuff I've read, scrolling.
It's a tough week.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 26.
Okay. Is it all right if I go next?
Yes, it is.
All righty. So my click of the week would be it's a tough call. Ultimate Comics Spider-Man is up there. It's probably second in line to Punisher: The Trial of the Punisher. I really liked this particular book. I thought it was pretty well done. So this is my click of the week. Ultimate Comics Spider-Man number 27 is right next to it.
Dirt?
Yeah, actually, I'm trying to find it here. I'm actually going to pick a book that we didn't talk about.
Uh-oh.
This is a small press book. This is from Unlikely Heroes Studios, and this is called Super, and this is a 52-page first issue.
Wow.
And I think it may have been a Kickstarter originally that got turned into a series. I'm not 100% sure on that. But this is basically a city full of, you know, your superheroes and your supervillains, but it really feels like one of those one-camera shoot comedies. All of the characters have their flaws. Some are very obvious and some are not as obvious. Some are sarcastic. Some try to be serious, and then it breaks down. What the difference between who's a hero and who's a villain just kind of depends on how much they wanted to try to get away with something and how many perks they had with being a hero, you know? So it's like the good guys aren't necessarily really that good and the bad guys aren't necessarily really that bad, but they're on opposite teams. And it really came out of nowhere. The artwork that's on the cover is the artwork that's on the inside of the book. It is super polished. It is super clean. There's a lot of dialogue, and the dialogue is snappy and punchy and crisp. So many of the characters are analogs to, you know, famous characters, popular characters, but they put their own twist on it where it feels like a new and different version of the character. It doesn't feel like they're just, you know, trying to do, well, this is their version of Superman. You're like, obviously it is their version of Superman, but it's not trying to be Superman. You know, it's like you have to have that character because everyone expects that character, but they kind of do their own thing with it. And the interaction between the characters, the way they treat each other and the way they act feels like, you know, if the three of us were stuck in a house to live together on a reality TV show and the stuff that we would try to pull on each other, this is what they pull on each other as members of the super team because they're forced to spend this time with each other. And, you know, it's everything about this book I loved. And so this is one of those that, like I said, it came out of nowhere. The only reason why I read it is because we randomly ordered a couple copies for the shelf. You know, nobody ordered it or anything, but we just, yeah, the artwork looks good. We'll go ahead and order just a couple. You know, it's not going to hurt anything just to have them. And they sold out in a snap, and I can see why, because
this
book was great. In fact, this is one of those where we're out of print copies. There's two other comic shops in town, and as far as I can tell, neither one of them ordered any copies at all. But it is available digitally. So even though we're out of print copies, I'm probably still going to buy a copy digitally just so I have the copy to go back to and read because I enjoyed it enough And I'm definitely gonna stick with the series and watch where it goes.
Let me see if I can find it on Comixology.
Interesting.
So that's my pick of the week, Super from cool. Unlikely Hero Studios.
Excellent. Way to give them some shine.
Oh, and there's a new issue of Batman Beyond Universe, or Batman Beyond 2.0 on Comixology.
Okay.
I haven't read it yet or downloaded it, but check for that.
Cool.
So, I want to thank everyone for tuning in to tonight's show.
Yeah, we had a lot of stuff to talk about this week. Hopefully we get back to like a regular amount of stuff to talk about next week.
Shout-outs to Dork Geekus on Twitter for tweeting at us and viewing. We appreciate that. Glad to see the video stream work for you tonight. Follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I have two of them on the bottom of my screen for those watching on video, at TimDogg98. And at the Click Nation. Dirt is at PCN_Dirt.
Hi, guys.
And Agent 70 is at Agent_70.
It's finally on the screen.
Yes, it is, with sound effects.
That's right.
So that's it for tonight's show. Tune in next week for another episode of the Comic Book Chronicles, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on theclicknation.com. And we are signing off. IDW. JC. DC. Marvel. Baby, yes. Justice League. Valiant. Dark One. What? Comic Book Chronicles has dopest trace chronic, yo. I'm steady tripping over them pages and dogging Adam Black. No, yeah. Graphic or not, this is motherfucking comic book art. The man, Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, Jim Lee, Rob Liefeld, what? We don't give a as long as them pages are hot. Is written by Chris Claremont, Jeff Johns, Alan Moore, or Grant Morrison.